Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9, if you will, for our Sunday school. Let's get this thing clipped back on. Appreciated everyone's patience last Sunday, trying to do Sunday school while we're all outside. I have a newfound, I always had respect for Brother Gordon, but now I'm starting to see a lot of what he had to go through in the beginning stages of that. And I tell you what, you folks are amazing with being, you know, I won't use the word compatible, but being helpful in that, having a good spirit and a good attitude. Appreciate you. But Jeremiah 17, verse 9, we are looking at the struggles of parenting, and not just parenting, but being the right kind of example to the younger people, younger generations for God. There has been a bit of a breakdown in education, a breakdown in raising people and encouraging them. And I think the breakdown comes from us just not being as sharing or as careful as we could be. Jeremiah 17:9 opens us up with, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Though it is good for us to have passions and to have emotion, they can just kind of be the seasoning that makes things better, but it can also be the spice that makes things worse. And we have to be careful with our reactions, with our attitudes, as they can ruin a great many of a thing just because we lack restraint. Parents, people in a church, have a responsibility to provide restraint in their lives so that others may see that as well. One of the bigger issues that a lot of people have with coming to church is, well, there's rules. I can't do this. I can't do that. And of course, we understand why a lot of those rules are there. But what of those rules that don't make apparent sense to a lot of people? I'll get into conversations with folks trying to invite them to church or have conversations with them. And they'll bring up some questions. You know, why can't I put this in my body? Why does the Bible say I shouldn't get this or that or listen to this or that? And what you're trying to convince them of is that it's a matter of your daily discipline that gets affected. And that's why God says keep them out there. Now, as a child of God, my number one motivation is I'm going to do something or not do something because God has commanded that in my life. That's my number one influence. I don't have to understand the psychology behind every little commandment for me to follow it. But there are some folks that hang on. They hold back on certain things. It's good for us to understand what Jeremiah 17, verse 9 says. You're going to have knee-jerk reactions that will be wrong. We're working with Gideon. I was looking over at Gideon this morning. He's not feeling so, wasn't feeling so hot yesterday. We were out there. We were at the Flushing Fair. And he ate more candy than I thought he did. And he was out in that hot sun. So he came in this morning, he's wiggling around, and he's uncomfortable, and I'm like, oh no. Now at first, when he says, my tummy hurts, he's a cute little boy, I go, okay, well, you know, you're our third child, we're kind of used to kids having tummy aches, it's no big deal. Came up here to the church, my wife gave me a phone call, it was a very big deal, a shower-worthy, very big deal for him and that little tummy ache. So I saw him wiggling around this morning, I'm like, oh no. I'm like, you okay, buddy, come here. But we think about that, our gut reaction to things, you're fine. And then later, when we're like having to hose the child down, okay, I was wrong. And that's my heart. Right? I made an assumption, I was wrong. How many times do we do that in a day? Where our reactions are not what they should be, our assumptions are not on par. I did the same thing yesterday. I came up here, I put my hand in the water because I had no idea how to tell if it was on. The heater was on downstairs for the water. I put my hand in the water, and Brother Tim, it felt warm. Wonder why the water felt warm. It wasn't because the pump was on, it's because it was hot in here. Like, all right, it's good. I came in this morning, put my hand in there because I still didn't feel quite confident, and guess what? It felt cold. So thankfully we got the heater on, but our assumptions aren't right. You'll wake up in the morning and the morning prior, you'll look over at your spouse, say, I love you, it's good to see you. Hey, can I handle that for you? Let me take care of this. And there's love and there's contentment in the house. Then you'll wake up, maybe you had a bad dream, maybe it was the pizza you had before you went to bed, but you wake up in a foul mood and everybody's, get out of the way, why is everybody doing this? I don't understand this. There's a towel on the floor. Our heart is deceitful that way. You can't always go by your gut reaction. There must be something that governs you other than the whims of your fancy, because you're going to make some mistakes. How many people stand trial for murder because they reacted instead of thinking? How many people are sitting in jail cells today because they did something out of their passions, out of their desires, because the only thing that governed them were those passions and those desires? The natural man, psychology would call it the id. Military people would call it your monkey brain. The natural man is wicked and receives not the things of God, according to 1 Corinthians 2:14. Therefore, as parents, mentors, fellow church members, we must have the right priorities for our reactions. We must hold ourselves accountable for things long before we do them. I saw this yesterday at the fair. There was a parent and they were going through, and it was hot yesterday. It was right before the storm. It was hot. It was muggy. Nope. There was a lot of people kind of on edge with their patience. And this mom kind of stopped, shook her kid real hard, and just very impatient, very insulting to the kid, very aggressive to the kid, and then pushed him toward the line. Well, guess what? Little buddy didn't want to go on the ride now. He was upset, right? He was scared. He was embarrassed. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. Now, my kids, they kind of moaned through the last part of it. Why are they moaning through the last part of it? It's hot. Not a lot of sources of water. So we got big old things of water. And guess what? Their attitudes changed. Right? If I'm looking at my kids and I have to say, okay, what conditions are we in? You know, it's been 3 hours in a vehicle. Are my kids really, do they really have to go to the bathroom? Well, after 3 hours, probably. We plan our reactions ahead of time. What we bring in is what will affect them. Right? If I sit there and I'm manipulative and I'm mean and I'm angry and I'm nasty to my children, guess what? They will grow up either having issues with self-esteem, not that I put much in the worship of ego, but they'll see themselves wrong. They'll be of a very frail mentality. Everything they'll do, they'll second guess and beat themselves up on. Or on the other hand, they can become very disrespectful, very abusive in their own relationships. Right? What we put into children, what we put into young people is what comes out of them eventually. So therefore, we ourselves, in order to be better mentors, parents, grandparents, whatever, we ourselves are to have a particular kind of restraint on what we do. Again, all of our actions and reactions belong to God. Therefore, how we plan them and what we do must be thought of before we cross that bridge. Right? Who among us would go on a vacation with no plan of where we're going, what we're going to do when we pack no bag? With four kids, I can't go to the grocery store without a well-packed bag, right? You just don't. You got to have a plan for it. I almost take as much into the store as I need to bring out of it when I've got the full group with me. If we go back to where we were looking at in, let me grab my notes here properly. 2 Samuel chapter 13. 2 Samuel 13. I think last time we did this, I sent you to 1 Samuel, so I want to be careful. I might have gone to 1 Samuel. It says, and it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Verse 7, then David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat. David had to try to go back, and go ahead and feel free to read through this chapter. David had to make a change. He had to try to make up for a mistake that he did. Who brought sexual immorality into the house? David did. Well, my kids weren't on the rooftop. My kids had no idea what happened. They only heard rumors from... No. They heard the rumors. And if you don't think that one sin in one area does not come home and carry into other areas, you are absolutely mistaken. What we poison in one area poisons the whole body. If a poisonous snake were to bite your leg, the whole body is in trouble. Everything circulates spiritually. I cannot have a bad Bible reading habit where I'm just not reading it, I'm not exercising my faith whatsoever, and expect my parenting to be on point. I cannot be the parenting. We talk about parenting and being a grandparent. There's a lot of advice to be given from a godly grandparent to a young parent who's just starting off with their kids. There's a lot of advice that can go back and forward. That advice becomes tainted when our lives are not correct. How can I teach my children self-discipline if I allow them to pick up my bad habits, or if I have those on display for them to see? We may think that we can hide certain things, right? I mentioned before there was a young man who gave the testimony that he picked up smoking from his dad, he picked up pornography from his dad, and all of those things dad hid from him. He thought that he had no idea that his kid knew anything about those things, and he got both of those things from where his dad had hidden them. It's just how that works. Kids are inquisitive, right? And we even think among ourselves, well, I pretty much am sure brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so does this, so it's okay for me to do it too. My dad, being a big drinker and a big smoker, told me at one time in my life that I was allowed to do neither. And I thought that was pretty remarkable given the fact that he was both drinking and smoking as he told me not to do it. Now, from a young person's perspective, how hypocritical, how wrong. You get a little bit of wisdom underneath you, you see, well, dad's hurt and he can't get rid of the stuff and he doesn't want me to follow him, right? A little bit of wisdom kind of clarified the situation for me, but we can't sit there and have those sins and expect our kids not to pick up after them. While I never touched a drop and while I never put a cigarette to my mouth, my brother did both. And he still struggles with both today. Now, do I blame my father? No. What I put in my body is my decision. It's an effect of what I have done. But at the same time, if a father opens the door, it's no surprise when the child walks through it. We must be strong in and of ourselves. We must restrain our sinful nature, therefore making it easier for them to see how to do it themselves. 1 Corinthians 1:6 says, and his father had not displeased him at any time in saying, why hast thou done so? And he also was a very goodly man, and his mother bare him after Absalom. The word displeased here means troubled or grieved. It seems that David only spoiled Adonijah instead of training and disciplining him in the way he should go. For children's own good, many times parents need to keep them from having their own way, even if children do get upset. I've met a lot of parents like that. Maybe you have too. Well, I don't want them to cry. You know what? I don't want my kids to cry either. I wish it was always smiles and giggles. But that's not how discipline is born. Sometimes I have to tell them no. They were all excited about something. They wanted to go eat a particular place. And I said, you know what? It's just not the right time, not what we had planned. And you know, for a little bit, a little bit of grumble. Now, do I collapse? Do I give in? Do I lose my mind, start yelling at them? No. Hey, no, guys, well, listen, this was the plan. We're going to stick to the plan for these reasons, and we're going to have a good old time. Just bear with me 5 minutes. We'll go get some water, and I promise you'll see how cool this is. Oh, okay. And we went and everything was fine. They cried for just a half a second and everything was okay. Hey, I want to go do this. Well, you know what God says about that. Well, I don't think that's fair. You hate me. Well, that's what the plan is. And this is what we're going to do. And I love you. And I don't want you to cry. I don't want you to be upset. But all the same, if I had a choice between you crying and doing what God's plan is, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do this. And they could be mad, and they could be upset. It's okay for a child to cry. It's okay for a child to not get what they want all the time. It is much better to teach them wisdom in their reactions, wisdom in their planning, than it is for them to have everything they want. Now, I did meet a parent one time. He took it to the complete opposite end of the spectrum. He would tell his kids no every now and then just to make sure they knew he could say no. And that was his wording, not mine. So that makes no sense whatsoever. Dad, can I have eggs for breakfast? No, we're having toast. Now, they had eggs. He had no problem against having eggs. But you know what? We're going to have toast because you asked for eggs, and I need to teach you that life's not always fair. Life will handle that stuff on its own. Life will teach that lesson, right? And this, typically we're like, all right, well, I don't want my kid to have this, but I will let him have something that's exactly the same. We can't create arbitrary rules. We have enough of them that work. One of the things that I like to, or not like to, but I struggle with, is me myself struggling with my weight, knowing that I have that gluttony issue, knowing that I lack self-restraint, right? Gideon's my favorite with this. He'll sit there and he'll just want more, 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 more. And I often see him asking for more when. When do you think he asks for more? When he's done? When he sees his older brothers or his dad ask for more. I want more! I got to look at that and I go, ooh, all right, Dad, that's where your restraint comes in. Not just in restraining him, but you restrain you and you show him, no, no, this is a good amount of food. And I've had to say that at the table a few times. This is a good amount of food. Is your tummy full? And he'll go like this. Yes, then we're done. Okay, let's go do this instead. And off we go. And maybe he'll cry for a little bit. But you know what? There's no point in having another hot dog if you haven't even touched the one you've got. He just wants more because he sees that. I show restraint. I teach him restraint. Now, I do that right now as they're young. No. When they get 10, 11, 12, 13, that's the time where they should get to the grips of understanding why we show restraint. Because if I ever just say, no, 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 you can't, you can't, you can't, and never show restraint myself, they're going to grow up and think, well, I've hit the magical age where actions don't have consequences. And mommy and daddy can't tell me what to do anymore. Right? As of right now, I explain to them. Then as they get older, I have expectations of them to tell me why we don't do certain things. So that way when they're 16, 17, 18, 19, it's no longer a matter of dad saying no. They've got the ability to put those things together. I don't do this not because dad says it's wrong, but because God says that it's wrong. I don't behave in this manner because dad says this is how a man or a woman should behave, but I behave in this manner and I have good integrity because that's what's expected of God. I show respect to others. I show respect to God in my good stewardship of these situations. We teach them honor. We teach them nobility. We teach them respect for other people. And all of a sudden at that age, they're making those decisions because they're grabbing those spiritual tools and they're putting them to work. And it's not a matter of because daddy said to do it, it's because this is what God expects me of me and I've seen and I've practiced the wisdom of it. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration website, in 1 year alone, the use of seatbelts in passenger vehicles saved an estimated 12,546 lives. Do me a favor. This is Sunday school. You can pop a hand up. Raise your hand if you grew up and you didn't wear seatbelts in the car. Man, one of my favorite road trips of all time. We were in a station wagon, and me and a couple of my cousins were arguing the entire way over who got to sit in the back of the station wagon in that one seat that faced out the back window. That was the seats. Didn't have a seatbelt. We never thought about that. All right, we went down to Florida one time in the back bed of my dad's truck. He had a nice little cap on it, so nobody, as long as you sat low enough, nobody knew you were there. No seatbelts, no plan if what we got hit. We got to go meet the Lord. It was either Aunt Helen or the Lord we were going to meet on that trip, and we didn't care. In my grandparents' car, he never had anybody wear the seatbelts. They had lost a child to a car wreck where they didn't wear seatbelts. 12,500 people, they estimate, their lives were saved by seatbelts. Now, I can sit there and I can point to my past and say, well, I never did it and I survived this far. Or I could point to 12,500 people who made it through that year just because they were wearing one. Again, we're showing wisdom, right? Restraint helps. Restraint, kind of reeling yourself in. Yeah, and I've often said this, and I'll continue to say this, just because feeling like a rebel is fun doesn't necessarily mean it's good for your health. And I've met some people who don't care about their health enough. They're like, I don't care, I'm wild, I'm free. You're going to be wild and free through that front windshield. You're going to be wild and free into that hospital. You're going to be, well, maybe not free, but you'll definitely be wild inside of that jail cell if we rebel against every little thing that we find. Rebellion is not as fun as it seemed in high school. Next thing we need to have a respect for is, or have a restraint for, outside influences. In my house, Dad controls the remote, unless Mommy has it, in which case Mommy has it. At no time do the kids have unrestrained viewing options. And a lot of people would say, well, that's very, you know, that's very restrictive. Yes. I am very restrictive as to what comes through that television. I'm very restrictive over what comes over the computer. I don't apologize for that. As a matter of fact, the same child safety procedures that are on the television and on their laptops and the tablets that their grandma keeps handing us tablets. I don't know what to do with that. We could open our own hardware store of the tablets my mother-in-law doesn't want anymore. she works for DTE, so they get new products all the time, and they get new equipment, and she'll buy a new thing that'll do this, and then she'll get bored with it, buy something brand new, and then send us the old stuff. And it's getting to be a lot, but I'll put the same child safety things that are on their devices are on mine. All because you let them borrow them? No, I don't let them have my phone. They've locked my mom out of her phone 12 times. I'm not letting them have my phone. It's because if they shouldn't have it, that should I. If I protect their ears from certain things and their eyes from certain things, why would I subject myself to them? You know, as was mentioned in the devotion this morning, the more you open yourself up to, the more you're giving the devil the ability to influence you. We need to be careful of the outside forces. Now, again, right now, Daddy controls that. Mommy controls that. We decide. But then as we're doing it, we're also teaching them why. Why do we not do this? Why do we not watch that? Why is this sort of thing bad? Not so that they'll have a full-on panic attack if ever they hear a dirty word or see violence, but so that when they're old enough to make the decisions on their own, they've got wise things to hang on to. They've got knowledge to hang on to that'll help them. I don't know who the author of this was, but somebody once said, "Tell me who your friends are, and I will tell you who you are." I've read this as well. Nearness often leads to likeness. Or as 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners." What I put myself around is what I will eventually end up regurgitating. You cannot put a good apple in a bag full of bad apples and expect the good apple to change the bag. It doesn't work that way, right? The one will always corrupt the other. Proverbs 13:20, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." If I let down my guard, my kids will be affected by that. It'll change my parenting style. It'll change my pastoring ability. It'll change all of that. And when my kids do certain things, I will be more permissive to it. Or, in a more hypocritical reaction, I will be a little bit more ramped up in my discipline of them to hide my own shame. Let's have good honesty. I don't do it for this reason. And my kids will look at that, and I'm hoping and praying that they catch on to it. The Lord will reveal that to them, and they will do the exact same way. Again, no guarantees in that. In 1990s, Bill Buford wrote a book called Among the Thugs, The Experience and the Seduction of Crowd Violence. He traveled to Britain to observe their soccer games since they were known for mob violence. He was amazed and disgusted at how they regularly vandalized things, stole from stores, and even murdered people. If you're unaware of this, go ahead and look it up. I mean, how soccer or how they would put a football is still a thing in their country, I do not know. But they destroy things in reaction. He was able to interview a few of the fans while he was there and notice that individually they all seemed like pretty friendly people. But you put them in that mob where all of a sudden there's adrenaline, there's frustration, there's global acceptance of a certain behavior, and it is far easier to do. We live in that society. The more I expose myself to media content that tells me that certain behavior is okay, the more I laugh at people acting lazy in their jobs, right? Isn't that the common theme among a lot of sitcoms? Oh, he was late for work, and we're laughing about that. Oh, they're terrible at their job, and we laugh about that. And then we wonder why the workforce looks the way that it does. Because while we're looking at that going, this is ridiculous, it is what we've surrounded ourselves by, and therefore it becomes the new normal. We must show restraint within ourselves in order for society to sustain itself, and we must show restraint in ourselves so that the younger generation coming up knows how to do the same. And then, of course, we behave in that way in restricting those things that come into the house. What you have hidden underneath your bed, your kids are going to get a hold of. What you have hidden in your heart, your kids will get a hold of. So you decide, what is it that I have? What level of restraint am I showing? Because that's what's going to greatly affect what they do. Now, again, a disclaimer, and many of you know this, you know, my mom did her best with certain things, right? She raised one kid. One of us is in a pulpit. The other one spent a lot of time in detention, right? There's no guarantees on things. Yeah, there just isn't. But what we're talking about is how do I greatly reduce the opportunity? And that is by keeping sin out and increasing education in the home. Now, many of you sit there, you're like, well, my house is empty and it's been empty for a while. Still show that restraint, because again, remember, you don't not sin because you don't want your kids to catch it. You don't sin because you want to please the Lord. So in these same things, we still hold to that and being the church member that we ought to be through that practice. Let's pray. Father, we